Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Every night of the week, in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women police and fire services, by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, a board certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the director of inpatient services at the VA, Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and the treatment of adults. She's also an all-time triathlete. So if you're having any problems with life and you need to talk to somebody, talk to a professional or give her a call at her office. If you're having any problems breaking through at that next level of competition, give her a call. She can help you out. Her number is 813-689-2466, and her offices are located at 339 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. Well, Z, it was a great week here. I'm sure it was pretty good up there, although it was considerably colder up there than it was down here.
Yeah, it is.
it is considerably colder up here. How's it going, Butch?
It's going good. Yeah, I just came in from getting sunburned today. It's 78 degrees, so I know that's not anywhere near what you guys have.
What? Wow, 78. Sounds a little low for you guys, actually.
Yeah, cold spell.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to have a rematch, huh? Wilder versus Fury?
Yeah, it looks that way.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, it looks that way. It looks that way. And the first fight was majorly exciting. You have to appreciate both guys. You can say what you want about Wilder. He's not skillful. He looks wild and ringing in there. Wilder, he's a guy who's deceptively smart. I mean, people could say he's wild and all of that. He's a very smart fighter, and he's smart in the fact that he knows what he has to work with. He knows that he's not the most technical guy, so he can't put himself in situations where his technique is going to really cost him. He knows he has the physical attributes of speed, power, and dynamicism. So he uses that to his fullest. And when he's not using it, he's basically taking away what you do best by keeping his range, by being a threat. And the thing with Tyson Fury is you can't do that all the time with Tyson Fury, a guy like Fury. He's longer than Wilder. How am I going to say this? He fights with, like, he has more experience, like he's a bit more seasoned than Wilder. Not saying he is, but, I mean, he just fights like he may have picked certain things, he picked the techniques up a little more. Not better, just more. And he was more focused on that. So going into this fight, I mean, both guys, as with the last fight, both guys have an avenue to win. To where I said that basically immediately after the fight, Deontay Wilder would necessarily win this rematch. Because you have a Tyson Fury who was off for 2 years, had two limited competition comeback fights, and then, had to lose a whole lot of weight to basically fit into the body that he brought into that night with Deontay Wilder and perform that way. So, and he's not an old guy. It's not like he's going to be over the hill. He proved that in that first fight. So, so I think, Tyson, he has seen Deontay before, and he's getting it back. And when you're getting it back, you get better. It's not a get it back and then lose it again. You tend to get better. Getting it back is a process. And I think in this fight, he's going to be better than he was in the process before. Deontay's always going to be dangerous, but he is who he is. He's not going to bring a whole lot different to this next fight. Maybe a little more aggression. Maybe he'll let his hands go a little more. Maybe even a little more patience, for all we know. Maybe you can rely on his timing. But, I mean, as far as any of the craft tweaks, you're going to see that more on Tyson Fury's end. So, I mean, but not saying, as I say, that's a fight I would not really, it would be hard to predict. I lean towards Fury, but, as I say, Deontay, he has a shot. Boy, does he have a shot.
Yeah. But you talked about his craftiness and his ability to snap back. Do you think that when he got hit and went down, what was it, the seventh round? And he laid on the floor till almost got an eight count, and then jumped
up
like he was reborn. 12th round, yeah.
Yeah, to be honest, I can't. He must have been reborn. I can't deny what he said, and I can't deny what I've seen. He was out. He was out, and around the count of maybe six, you see his chest jump. You literally seen his chest kind of jump. And when his chest jumped, he immediately woke up and got up. And you don't see that. I mean, guys can't fake that. That's one thing. And how do you know guys can't fake that? Because you've seen the look on Deontay's face. Like, he couldn't believe Tyson got up. Started smiling, shaking his head. Like, oh, my God, this guy got up from that? So, I mean, you have to figure that, I mean, Tyson has a chin. He has a good chin. He doesn't really want to get hit with that again, but he saw it. He saw it. He felt it. Knows he doesn't want to feel it again. Knows you don't get two of those. Two of those miracles. That doesn't happen. So he, but he's going to. I mean, I think that he's capable of adjusting to that. He did for quite a bit of the fight when they fought before. Mm-hmm.
You know, the neat thing with breaking it down for our fans, and by the way, we went over 300,000 this last weekend of listeners. So I really want to thank all the listeners that are out there that tune into the program nationwide. It's and we have a very large following from Europe in the, over in England and Ireland. I know Patty Monahan has a lot of things to do over there with us, and we want to thank those people. But at the end of that fight, Wilder thought that he should have, that the referee should have called it. And he wanted to, because exactly what we were talking about, the 12th round, and having been in a corner, worked the corner, can you break that down? As far as our listeners are concerned, what do you think that had happened at that point? You think he was? You say he was out. You think he was out, right?
Oh, sure. Fury was out. He was out.
Yeah.
He was out. I mean, we saw the shot, and we saw how he fell. He fell without bodily control, and he laid without bodily control. So I mean, he was out. He was gone.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, joined by everybody. I want to let everybody know that Ty has joined us now too. Hey Ty.
Hey, greetings, gentlemen. Greetings. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. Hey. We're doing great. We're just talking about Wilder and Fury rematch.
I hear you guys were talking about Fury getting up from that 12th round knockout shot. I didn't say 12th.
Right.
Round knockdown, because that would imply he was knocked down. He wasn't knocked down. He was knocked out. I saw his eyes roll in his head, and he was on a canvas prone, in a prone position. What happened simply was it's very easy to explain why he got up and how he got up. I think it's one of the easiest things to explain. If you are an atheist, you now believe in God. It's quite that simple. He was touched. You literally saw him touched. It's so funny because Zito and I watched the fight. When he got up, we were just, you know, shocked. And actually, when he got hit, the first thing I screamed is, he's dead, because it looked like he killed him. It was very weird. And just one replay, the very first slow-motion replay they show, you almost saw, you could literally see Tyson Fury's chest kind of jump. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's funny because before Keith's fight, Keith was doing a press workout. And
yeah, I gotta go get away from the television. My wife's in there.
And you know, they asked Keith about that, and Keith said, you know, the good Lord raised Tyson Fury up from the dead. And to me, that I stand by that. You know what I mean? I grew up a man of faith, you know that, but still, I stand by the fact that even if I was an atheist, I'd be like, oh my God, there is a God.
That's true.
Seriously.
Okay, yeah. Frank.
Hey, Chris, we're talking about the Wilder-Fury rematch and the 12th round knockdown. We were just going over that, how Fury came back and won the fight. But Z and Ty were both had just broken it down for our fans. And I want to let both of you know that I was talking to Z earlier that we went over 300,000 the last two programs. So we're very grateful to all our fans out there.
Last week?
So. Yep.
That was just wasn't much of a program, just you and I.
Yep, but we still went over.
What?
And the week before.
Well, that's good.
So,
okay.
Yeah, we're proud of that.
All right. Damn.
Ty, we got Anthony Joshua was supposed to be announced. He was going to do going to fight with Dylan White, but that seems to have dissipated. He's supposedly going to fight with Big Baby Miller on the either the 1st or the 8th of June. What's your thoughts on that?
So I don't know if you guys remember, last time I think I was on the show, I had said that. You know, everyone was talking about Dylan White looked like the next opponent. I pretty much told you guys, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be Big Baby Miller and Madison Square Garden. The reason why I knew that, well, I assumed that. I didn't know that for sure. But the reason why is because when you start to read a little bit beyond the news, and you start to really read the rumors. Now, you can't believe rumors, but you also can't believe everything you read in boxing mags either, boxing publications, because a lot of the articles are based on rumors. So as I started reading further and started looking at the situation further, it was pretty obvious to me that they were going in direction of a Big Baby Miller and setting up that U.S. debut at Madison Square Garden. One of the issues is that I had known that Hearn and his team had already contacted Madison Square Garden about a potential venue in the spring or summer. So instantly that made me say, well, you know what? And that Wembley date was getting a little too close to promote a heavyweight title fight as well. So it was pretty obvious to me, even in spite of what Dylan White was saying, because they could have always offered him more money. I was just like, that's not really where Eddie Hearn wants to go. He's not looking at the Dylan White fight right now. For whatever reason, I don't know. He's looking at that Big Baby Miller fight. My opinion on the fight, Big Baby Miller is a guy who pushes the pace, but he doesn't sit down on his punches, throws a lot of arm punches. I don't see him beating Joshua. If he did, it would be a surprise, not because you don't see certain talents or gifts in him, but because he's fought no one remotely to Joshua. Big Baby Miller, kind of like another big, heavy guy who was really charismatic before him, Chris Areola, is getting a title shot without ever having faced a top 10 ranked contender. So he's getting a title shot by virtue of the fact that he is from New York. If the fight's going to be in Madison Square Garden, he's got a big personality. He's going to help sell the fight, and he's a big, physically imposing looking guy. That's what that is. But at the same time, it's not necessarily, it's a risk. Anytime you step into the ring, it's a risk. Make no mistake. But this is an easier fight than some of the other fights Joshua could have. The only way it's not is if Big Baby Miller shows us something we haven't seen against a competition level he's never seen.
Z, what's your thoughts? Let's go to Chris. And Chris, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I can understand him fighting Big Baby Miller because he's just what he said he was. He's an easy opponent, and he's going to be fighting in America. So why take on that other guy, Galen White? Galen White is pretty good heavyweight. So he'd rather, you know, go the easy route, and he's going to milk his career as long as he can. He knows he's got a big shot coming up against either Wilder or the other, whoever wins that fight. So it makes sense that Joshua would take an easy fight in this country. Why the hell do you want to fight killers all the time, you know? I mean, I don't see anything wrong with it, but I don't like Baby Miller. I don't think he has enough talent to ever beat Joshua. I mean, he's slow. He's not fast enough to beat him. He sure and hell can't outbox him. How's he going to win? I mean,
You know what? You know what? It's just like Dr. Chris said, though. You know, the big thing is that you're ultimately trying to build that fight, right? Trying to build his profile even more. He's got a huge profile in the UK, talking about Anthony Joshua. However, to make him a pay-per-view attraction, he needs to come to the United States. It's just that simple. So all of a sudden, you bring him to the United States. He squashes Big Baby Miller if he does what we all think he should do. I'm not saying Big Baby shouldn't pose some sort of threat, but nonetheless, Joshua should go in as a pretty big favorite. So if he beats Big Baby, all of a sudden he's enhanced his profile in the United States, and it helps make that fight with Fury and Wilder bigger. Here's the other thing, too. In half the amount of fights as Wilder, and less fights than Fury, Joshua's actually fought probably a little bit better competition. Outside of Ortiz and Fury, you know what I mean? Joshua, you know, outside of, you know, for Wilder, outside of Ortiz and Fury outside of, you know, essentially really Klitschko and Wilder, you know, Joshua has consistently fought pretty good competition. So I could give him this marketing pass. I don't like Big Baby Miller as an opponent, but I don't also think that the Dillian Whyte fight was necessarily a huge selling fight because as much as Dillian Whyte's improved, Joshua knocked him out before, and I think the same was kind of expected. I think this is a – from a business standpoint, I'm not talking about competitive standpoint. I'm not talking about boxing. I'm talking about prize fighting. From a prize fighting standpoint, I understand the marketing strategy behind this fight and this move. So,
yeah, to me, Ty's right. It's the path of, in the boxing terms, path of least resistance with business benefits.
Yeah.
As far as Anthony Joshua, as far as what Hearn is trying to marketing with Joshua, you go to Big Baby. He's right now the path of least resistance. He's money. He's
yep.
American money.
Yep.
You go ahead, get after that's done, you always have Dillian Whyte in England. That'll generate money, but you're going to have that fight still. Dillian White's not really going anywhere, and you could, you know, that builds, you could still build him up a bit. So then you could take Joshua there. Now, you know, as far as now, you could go ahead to Wilder, Fury, go on to the, you know, to those guys, you know, if the promotion's right. That's smart. To be honest, that is smart, and it's still sort of doing what Hearn kind of's been doing, protecting Joshua. Now, as far as the fight with him and Big Baby has talents. He has talents. He's a quick-handed guy. He will work and throws pretty good combinations. He doesn't have, for his size, he doesn't have a big touch. To be honest, he's a big guy. You think he have a little bit bigger punch. Now, he's not a soft punching guy because he's so big. His problem against Joshua is he's going to get jabbed all night. And if Joshua wants to go ahead and commit, he'll commit. He'll commit, and he might. And I could see him getting Big Baby out of there. Miller, as I say, is quick-handed, but his feet are not quick. He's not a burst fighter with his feet at all. He's a walk towards you fighter, stand in the pocket. You have to be in his wheelhouse for Miller to look good. And one thing is, Joshua is he plays all around the board. He plays too much all around the board. I could see
him.
Joshua sitting up there.
He doesn't mind keeping it long and safe. He showed you
exactly
that.
Exactly.
So,
and I could see Joshua out there, all, you know, just for the whole fight, just sitting up being comfortable with the jab and Miller not being able to deal with it. Or I can see Joshua being comfortable with keeping him at distance until Joshua's comfortable going in there and for the kill. I see a knockout. Joshua, he's a guy that if he could do it, he'll do it. With Joseph Parker style, Joseph Parker wasn't that easy to get at. And the weapon that he could get at him with, he used it to maximum effect. Every time Joseph Parker came in, he would smother everybody's work. So, I mean, that was how that fight went. Miller is not – his feet aren't liver than Joshua's, period. Forget what your upper body's doing. You can throw the best combinations in the world. If your feet can't get you to the target, they're useless. Your hands are useless. And I see a whole lot of that in this fight. I see that until Joshua really starts laying that power.
You know, with that said, I think we all concur that Joshua should beat Big Baby. But, you know, in all fairness, to get, you know, looking at Big Baby, I just also like to, you know, in a sense, play devil advocate. Big Baby's path to victory, based on what we've seen of him, would be to work his way in Joshua's wheelhouse and outwork him. He throws more punches than Joshua.
Yeah.
He fights at a high pace. Joshua has been known to have some a bit of conditioning problems because of all the muscle he carries. He's done a couple mm-hmm. different things to alleviate some of those problems, though. He's lost a lot of them, not a lot, but he's leaned up a little bit. And he's also learned to pace himself better. But nonetheless, that's just something that because of how he's built, he's going to have to deal with. We know when you're more muscular, it takes more oxygen. So Big Baby Miller has an opportunity because he throws a lot of punches. And the reason why he does that is because he doesn't sit down on most of his punches. That's why he's not a big puncher, too. He throws a lot of arm punches, but he throws a lot of punches. So his path to victory would be to close the distance and to just outwork Joshua and hope he could just wear Joshua down. That's about it for him. Unless, again, he would have to show something that – we've never seen against a competition level that he's never seen. So,
Zach, if he would have fought a Malik Scott, a quality, rangy guy, if he had something like that under his belt, we could gauge it. I could see it a little different. He certainly has a path to victory. It's just I think the experience factor is really going to kill us.
You know what? Here's the thing. He's got a couple tall guys. He's got, Johan Duhapis. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What he doesn't have is, and this is no disrespect to Duhapis, but what he doesn't have is a top quality foe that could really give you a gauge of where he's at. You know, one thing one thing Mikey Garcia said talking about Errol Spence is we always talk about how Mikey doesn't like to go to the body, and Mikey says, I don't go to the body much. But one thing he said about the Errol Spence fight is, hey, this is a guy who's going to make me show more because I'm going to have to. Mikey's fought at a certain level. So if he says he can show more, it's like, I believe you can because, I see what you can do, and you show more when you have to. You have showed more. Just like Zito said, he used to punch the body. Well, because he used to fight Orlando Salido. You got to do more sometimes, you know what I mean? But Big Baby Bill Miller has never fought a certain level of competition to take him out of his comfort zone. And so we really don't know what he has at a certain level. So, again, it's going to be my motto for this fight. Essentially he's going to have to do something we haven't seen against a competition level he hasn't seen. And, so we'll see. But I don't favor him.
I want to hold off on want to talk to you guys about the Thurman fight last week. But I want to hold off till Dan gets on. Dan's I just tried to get a hold of Keith, and he's on his way to Japan to meet with his wife, so he's not going to have time to talk to us tonight. But Dan Birmingham will be on in a few minutes, and I want to hold off on Keith's fight. There was an undercard fight. Adam Kalnacki and Gerald Washington. It was a pretty good fight. What do you think, Z?
Hello, you faded out for a quick second. I'm sorry. Hello?
The Kalnacki fight. The undercard.
Against Gerald Washington.
Yeah.
Oh man. I didn't predict Gerald Washington to win. I didn't predict Kowacki to do that soon. But I've seen both fighters several times, and I'm going to describe Kowacki. Kowacki is unimpressively impressive. He's not a guy who's going to explode all over you. He's not a guy who's going to, blinding speed or one punch KO, you're out of their power. But he's a guy who knows how to work. He knows how to get good work done. And to a certain degree, not to totally get good work done to him. He's hittable at times because he's not the fastest or most reactive guy. Doesn't get hit clean a lot. And he tends to work his way into clean punches, meaning he, especially in heavyweights, nowadays, you'll see guys, they're exploding. Everything's hard. Everything's hot. To where he's a guy who will throw a few soft punches to the head and land a hard one, two to the body, and then come back hard to the head. I mean, he's a guy who knows how to work soft punches, the hard punches, the got to work your angles, head the body, step around, you know, change your punches, change your distance. He's a guy who's well-schooled. The only real deficiency I see at Kawaki is physical. As far as, you know, he's not the fastest guy, not necessarily the biggest guy in the land of giants. He's a sizable guy. But I like the way he works. I really, really like the way he works. Pretty tough guy, too, from what I see right now. Now, you have some big hitters, the biggest hitters you're going to have, but from what I see, he's pretty tough. So, I mean, I like to see level his competition. He looks like he's trying to step it up, and he's looking good when he does it. He's doing it, so.
Good. Chris, did you see the fight last night, the last week?
Yeah, I, you know, that guy is he is an enigma. That's the only word I can call it. Well, that body he has,
yeah.
I got to laugh when I see that big, fat body. He fights stand-up, too. He doesn't, there's no chance of him bobbing and weaving. He's too fat. He's too fat to move around that way. But he's a stand-up fighter, and he can take a punch. And I think he's very entertaining. I sure don't like to watch him all the time. I just can't believe that out of that lard, so much talent comes out, you know? he's a formidable opponent, that fat guy. I can't believe he can't get in better shape training, that he has to come in so fat, you know? So that's... But I get a kick out of him. I've seen him a couple of times, and makes me laugh. You know, as far as Joshua, and I'm thinking, as you guys are talking about Big Baby, how can Joshua miss Big Baby with right hands? Big Baby has to come in on the low side. Joshua's going to throw that right hand down from above and bomb the side of his head. I figure his eye will be gone shut. I don't think it can go six rounds. He just can't get out of the way of Joshua's right hand. And Joshua can move into position to throw a thunderous right. And I just can't see Big Baby getting out of the way. If he wants to win, he's got to take the fight to Joshua. Joshua is the champion.
Yep.
And he's got to take the fight to him to win. And when he does, he's very vulnerable. So that's my and how can he possibly miss with that big thunderous right hand, overhand right? He's going to be punching down on him. And from the right side, he's going to be maybe Miller will be moving to his right, and that right hand's going to be coming right sideways, right on his face, right on the side of his head, you know. But I'm wondering just how far that the Polish fighter is going to go, you know, and how long he's going to get away with that. I mean, he really can't transform his body. He's never going to be cut. He's going to look fat forever. Maybe it's an advantage to him to be fat. You know, I don't know. Maybe he's a little stronger. Maybe he can take it more in a body better that way. I don't know, but sure hell is an entertaining fighter.
Yeah, good old Adam Kalnacki is becoming an East Coast attraction, absolutely. And, you know, he fought Gerald Washington, another tall guy that Big Baby Miller fought, although obviously not one as skilled as Joshua. But it took Big Baby Miller to the later part of the fight to Glenn, I think round 8 or 9, to get rid of Gerald Washington. It took Wilder 5. Kalnacki got rid of him, you know, in 2. Styles make a fight. Make the fight, but that was nonetheless very impressive by Kalnacki. What was even more particularly impressive to me was that he threw over 100 punches the first round. Heavyweights typically don't throw over 100 punches any round, even the first. Why that's impressive to me is because it's one thing to say, oh, he threw over 100 punches the first round, you know, but in the sixth you'd gas out. But I saw a fight with him and Charles Martin in which he threw and exorbitant amount of punches the whole fight. So this is not a guy who gasses out. I attribute it to the fact that he's very relaxed in the ring. He's very, and I think that's like like Zito said, because he's relaxed, it allows him to touch, bang. He doesn't throw everything with heat like the Charlos do because they're so tense and tight. He's very relaxed in the ring. You know what? His game, you guys are going to think I'm crazy when I say this. His game, believe it or not, it reminds me a little bit of Gennady Golovkin. He likes to walk you down. I mean, he's obviously a little bit more frenetic, not as technically astute and sound and everything, but he's not as bad technically as he looks physically by any stretch of the imagination. He likes to walk you down. He likes to get himself at a certain range. He's not an all-the-way-in inside fighter. He can fight inside, but he gets himself at a certain range, and he touches you to create openings for the bigger shot.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, he reminds me of Golovkin. Another thing, too, I like about Cal Mackey, in spite of his body shape and his physical limitations, he's a guy who keeps balance very well. He's always on balance. He doesn't overextend himself. So he's a guy who's very comfortable with his limitations and has learned how to fight within them. So he's not a guy you see lunging, running after you. You know, he fights at a steady, high pace, and he carries people like he carried Charles Martin really fast. I think he's a guy who's going to be limited at a certain level of the division. Absolutely, I believe. However, he's going to make for entertaining fights. And he's going to give everybody hell until, you know, that particular person gets rid of him, I believe. So, but he's a fun guy. He's got more craft, technique, and you know, he's more dexterity than he physically appears to have.
All right. Let me ask you about another fight another fighter. Alexander Usyk now is going to make the move to heavyweight. What's your thoughts on that one, Chris?
Who?
Who's
going to move into the heavyweight division?
Alexander Usyk.
I don't know a hell of a lot about him. Maybe I missed him, but I don't know a hell of a lot about him.
So
who did he fight?
Usyk, he's the guy who unified the cruiserweight titles in the World Boxing Super Series Cruiserweight Tournament. He beat everybody in the cruiserweight division and became the undisputed cruiserweight title champion. Then he just knocked out Tony Bellew in a fight over in the UK.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What size is he? What's his height and weight?
He fought at cruiserweight, 200. He's about 6'4".
Yeah.
Is he 6'4"?
Yeah. Tall guy. Tall for cruiserweight, yeah. He's tall cruiserweight.
He's another guy who's, you know, a smaller man. He knows where the money is. He's going after it. So you can't blame him.
He's already accomplished everything in the cruiserweight division. He's undisputed cruiserweight
champion.
Yeah,
what the hell can you do? Yeah, he can't do anything. He's got to go for the money. He's got to put weight on. If he's 6'4", and he takes 6 months to do it, he could put 15, 20, 25 pounds on. He should be at 6'4". I don't know what his frame looks like. Christ, but anyway, you got to go after the money. And it's not in the cruiserweight division. That's a division nobody really cares about. And how many unsuccessful cruiserweights have tried to win the heavyweight title? I'm thinking back, you know? How many Evander Holyfields are around that they could pack muscle on the way he did and compete at 214, 215, like Evander did, you know?
And you know what, Dr. Chris, we can name a few, 200-pound guys who moved up to try to win the title. But there are more guys who moved up and weren't even competitive that we probably couldn't even mention. You know what I mean? So, like Orlin Norris, who was a cruiserweight and moved up. You know what I mean? But he wouldn't be a guy you'd mention who tried because he just wouldn't come to your mind. So, you're right. It's not as easy as Holyfield made it seem, I guess.
Yeah, tough thing to do. There's an awful gap between the super heavyweights today and the 200-pound division. You know, it's a big gap.
Yeah,
these guys are huge. They're gigantic.
And I love
it's
Alexander.
Well, Well, to me, I kind of equate that with how it used to be back in the day when you didn't have the cruiserweight division, when you had to jump up from 175 up to the heavyweight division. Now you have the cruiser. It's kind of like that. It kind of balances out to me.
That's a good point. Because Usyk would have been a heavyweight. He would have been a heavyweight. And so now what he's doing is fighting a super heavyweight as opposed to Billy Kahn going up to fight Joe Lewis. There's an equivalency to that. I concur, Beans.
Yeah.
Zito. Sorry. Right. Beans Zito. He's left.
You know, there were only a few light heavyweights that really looked good against heavyweights. One of them was Harold Johnson. The other was Ezra Charles.
Yeah.
Who finally moved into the heavyweight division. But he was just a phenomenal... Ezra Charles was a phenomenal fighter. And he did good at the heavyweight. And of course, the heavyweights weren't bigger. You know, they were so small. But when Charles finally moved into the heavyweight division, he beat an old Joe Lewis. And then he fought Marciano, which was a great fight.
Yeah.
But Marciano pounded him around the ring at the end of the 15th round. His face was swollen like a balloon from the accumulation of punches. And he was reeling at the end of the fight. Marciano was knocking him, you know, across the ring with his right hands, and his face just looked distorted. But he was a great fighter. But it's hard. It's hard. I tell you guys, I really strongly feel that it's awful difficult to overcome, you know, where a good small man can beat a good big man. It's tough to give that weight up and fight. They lean on you. They're tired. They tire the hell out of it. In a 15-round fight, it finally catches up with you. The rest of those guys around, having them lean on you, they're stronger, they're bigger, you know, and I don't have much faith. I can't blame the guy for what he's doing, but I don't have any faith in him knocking anybody out.
In those cases, 95% of the time, small guys are always going to have to do more work than a big guy. Even if he's not leaning on you, he's absorbing more. He's always going to have to absorbing harder, should I say? He's always going to have to do more work than a big guy for the most part.
Yeah, they that's just what they have to do. They have to outwork, and it's hard. It's very hard. I mean, these guys today that we're talking about are gigantic. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Frank. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're honored to have a good friend of ours, Dan Birmingham, on with us tonight. Dan had a fantastic night a week ago today, and here we are. We have him on, and we're just so proud that Keith did so well, and it's under Dan's tutelage that this has come full force. Dan, would you like to expand on the fight last week?
Yeah, one word, tough.
Yes, it was.
I thought Lopez showed a big heart, a great chin. You know, he fought a great fight. He fought a great fight. Gave Keith all he wanted.
Mm-hmm. That was great.
Hey Dan. Go ahead. I'm going to ask you a question. You might get a little annoyed at me. Why in the hell does Keith run backwards so much? Here's a guy that if he stands his ground, can outpunch almost any welterweight, and he runs like that Mexican was Mike Tyson, for Christ's sake. I'm looking, why the hell, if Keith got his feet under him, he's a brutal puncher. I think he ran too much. I really do. I know you're telling him, I heard you saying you got outboxed, we got outboxed. But he doesn't look comfortable running like that. It's not a crowd-pleasing style. But that other guy, like you said, he's tough, man. He slings them damn punches. You don't know where the hell they're coming from because they're wild and they're crazy. They're harder to get away with sometimes than the standard fighter. But the guy had a lot of heart and he was big. You know, he was nice size. I mean, you know, it was a good fight on Keith's part, but I just felt like he showed that guy too much respect. Let me put it that way. And if he stood his ground, I don't see that guy ever getting a draw on one. Didn't they have it a draw on one card, on one judge?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
Yeah, I don't see Keith ever getting a draw if he stands his ground. He punches so damn hard, and he gets his feet under him. And, you know, the right hand left hook combination will work better. I don't know. I just don't. To me, he moved backwards too much. What do you think? You want to tell me I'm dumb or what?
No.
Is that a consensus of opinion?
Well, what I think is he was off almost 2 years, so he wasn't really quite able to get into his groove.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being off 2 years is an awful long time, especially at this level. So we'll see what happens next fight. We'll see if he pulls it together better.
Do you think he'll stand it? Now, the other guy hit fairly hard, you know, when he slung those punches. Christ, I mean, they were really wild punches, wild right hands and left hands. But I think he was wide open. If Keith stood his ground, I think he could have pot shotted that guy to death. I mean, that guy was vulnerable to right hands. I mean, he really moved forward at a speed where he was off balance. And you know, when you get hit coming in like that, you get flat, you know, you get a flash, whatever you want to call it. It hurts like hell. And I think Keith could have moved over to his right a little bit, come back with right hands, and I think he could have taken that guy out of there. I really think if they fought again, he'd take that guy out. I mean, he'd stand his ground more. Go ahead.
I do too. I mean, you know, we need to run through the fight and look at the positives and the negative and, you know, make an assessment there and see what we need to work on more.
Hey, Dan, this is Ty.
Go ahead, Ty.
Okay, yeah, Dan, this is Ty. The first thing I wanted to ask you is how's Keith elbow and his hand? How did the injury make out during the fight? The injuries, how was he? Was he still?
The elbow held up pretty good. He did have a sore hand after the fight, but, you know, that's pretty common with punchers. They usually have sore hands for a week after the fight, no matter how you wrap them. But, you know, he really didn't take that many punches, which I was happy of.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe took more than he should have. But, you know, it's all about getting back and getting sharp and getting back in the public eye and, you know, and going forth with his career.
So he came out unscathed as far as the injuries he had prior. That's the big thing.
Yeah. Yes.
Good. Now, personally, I thought that was the best version of Jose Zito Lopez I've seen since he fought Victor Ortiz. That's just my opinion. I thought he came looking phenomenal. First of all, he also looked big for the weight. And I know he's typically viewed as a 140 guy, but he's fought as high as 154, in case people forget, against Canelo. So he looked like a big guy that night. To me, it looked a lot bigger than Keith, which was somewhat surprising. I thought Keith would look a lot denser. With that said, how did you like Keith's timing as well as his craft? Did he look a little rusty to you? Like, to me, I thought personally, I thought he looked sharp, but I thought his timing, you know, was coming back as the fight went on. It didn't seem like his timing was quite there the way it had been, but I thought he still looked sharp as far as his combination, his punches. How did he look to you as far as what you could assess?
Well, I believe you 100%. I thought he looked sharp. It was a long layoff, and it's really hard to just jump back in there and look as great as your last fight. But, you know, it's a process, and he understands that. And I think he'll look a lot better his next fight, no matter who the opponent is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, Ben. First of all, I want to commend you guys on the win. Keith, he may not have looked as sharp as he did in his previous fights before the two-year layoff, but he still looked sharp, and he looked a measure of tough. And I have to say, as a trainer, you know, just I know you as a trainer, kind of, you know, that seventh round kind of makes you a little nervous.
Scared the heck out of him.
I know. Yeah, he showed toughness and he showed very good conditioning. I mean, you have to be fit to play it, do that, and then come back in, you know, at the end of that round to kind of, you know, get his back a little bit. My question to you would be, you know, after this performance, would you, before seeing any of the or, you know, would you see the, would you prefer as you know, as a trainer, would you prefer Keith the, I mean, as far as seeing the top level guys, you know, the top, I guess, three guys, you know, any of those guys, or would you prefer him to take another tune-up fight? I know how promotions are, but what would you like?
Well, I hate to call these fights tune-up. That was an awful tough tune-up.
Yes.
Very tough tune-up fight. But maybe somebody that isn't in the top three or four, maybe less down, maybe 7, 8, 9, something like that. But, you know, we definitely want to fight Pacquiao in the future. Keith stated that.
He wants
to fight Pacquiao. Pac wants a rematch with Floyd, so that might be tough. So we'll just have to see what Al Haymon and all of us come up with.
You know what? Obviously, if that Pacquiao fight presents itself, you have to take that fight. Absolutely. With that said, I look at it this way. I, for one, when it was announced that, well, even when it was bandied about that Jesse Vargas might be Keith's first opponent and then Josecito Lopez, each time I was like, wow, that's pretty stiff coming back from a 22-month layoff.
Yeah.
Just for some comparison, obviously, you know, Keith took better care of his body, but just for some comparison, Tyson Fury came back and fought Sefer Safari. Sefer Safari is a guy who allowed Tyson Fury to pick him up at the weigh-in the way you pick up, like, your girlfriend and walk her across the threshold at the bow. You know what I mean? So say what you want about that, but that was his first fight back. Keith's first fight back was against Josecito. So personally, going in, I thought that was an extremely stern first fight back, specifically since Josecito had just started training and been training with Robert Garcia and those guys. You know, I saw what they did with Marcos Madonna, and I know Josecito had been sparring with Mikey Garcia. I was just like, man, this is kind of bold to me. And first of all, I think Keith needs to be commended for that choice. I think he could have gotten away with coming back with someone a little bit less than Josecito Lopez. And also, you fought a more live opponent than Pacquiao did. That's just quite simple. The Josecito Lopez you fought that night was better than Broner has ever been, in my opinion. So I thought you fought a really potentially top 10 welterweight, you know, at least fringe top 10 welterweight that we didn't think was fringe top 10 going in. Everybody thought he was a little bit past it and a little too small for the weight, and he proved everyone wrong. So I don't think anything really needs to be taken away from Keith coming off a 22-month layoff, but I think more credit needs to really be given to Josecito on the way he showed up and came and fought. And I think the Josecito who showed up that night would be hell for any welterweight, simple as that. With that said, again, starting with Josecito puts you in a position where, you know, the next fight could also, you know, be pretty tough unless you take a step back. But I think ideally, you know, it would be great if you could get a fight in, you know, before the fall, just to you know, sharpen up and stay tuned up, you know, because to me, Keith looked sharp. Timing was a little off. One thing like that Tyson Fury did is he took that other fight against Francisco Pianetta, slightly more stern competition, enough to give him 10 rounds and just work his timing out. And in the Deontay Wilder fight, it seemed like his timing was getting even better as that fight went on. So, you know, Dan, the more you do it, the sharper you get. So that's kind of what I hope for Keith now.
Well, I agree 100%. I agree 100%. But we didn't expect Lopez to be that tough and to be that good and to be skilled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the films that I watched of him, he was a lot better the night of the fight against Keith.
Yeah, that was the best version of Lopez I've honestly ever seen. I mean, by far.
But I also think, you know, Keith boxed well. He used his jab, his footwork, his ring generalship. And,
yeah.
You know, if he wasn't so skilled and prepared, that would have been a disaster.
Oh, yeah.
Well, early in the fight, with that left hook that Keith hit him with, I mean, that was a really good polished punt. Boom. I mean, I thought he could have done that, continued on with that style. Stay in there and pot shot, counter punch. He had his weight under him. He could have. But, you know, at that kid knew he had a hell of a chin. And he wasn't afraid to go in and mix it up with Keith. Even after he got hit that hard, that early, you know, with that left hook. And that kid wasn't afraid. He got a lot of guts. He knows he's got a good chin. So he came in there, flying in there wild, you know, throwing anything he could, you know. And he made the fight. He really made the fight. He went after Keith. And but I thought he left himself very, very vulnerable at counterpunching. But I was surprised when Keith was moving back, he couldn't stop that fast and then counterpunch because, you know, he lost an opportunity by moving back. And you know how you get flashed when you're moving in and somebody stings you coming in? I thought Keith could have taken him out of there, had he. But again, like you say, he's been out 2 months. He didn't expect this guy to have a chin like he had and be as strong and durable, and he wanted to win that fight. That kid, he did give Keith a tough night. He gave him a tough night. There's no question about it. You know? So
I thought, being off almost 2 years, I mean, I thought he did well. We definitely have things to work on. But 2 years is a long time to not be back in the ring, especially at that level.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Dan,
that's why I thought it was a very stern test.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
In the seventh round, Keith gets stung there. And I took a deep breath because I was worried about what was going to go on. And then Lopez came back after the fight and said he thought that the referee should have stopped the fight.
No.
And
no.
Given him the win. But he certainly didn't earn it at the end. But were you worried at that point when he got stung in the seventh?
I was. I mean, I was concerned for sure. But I know Keith has a great chin and he'll recover fast. And, you know, that's what he did. And then he went right back to work, boxing with his jab and his footwork and everything else.
So, Dan, a quick question. And I think this would just be really interesting, specifically for people who might be listening who've never had an opportunity to corner a fighter or be in a corner. When Keith came back after that seventh round, it was obviously his toughest round of the fight. Arguably the first round he really lost clean in that fight. What did you say to him? What advice did you have for him? Or what strategy did you give him?
Well, first of all, I knew he was upset, so I tried to calm him down. I said, just relax. You know, we'll get through this. And, you know, I wanted him to box more. I definitely wanted him to use his jab even more than he did. And I wanted him to faint, but he didn't faint much. You know, if he could have fainted and then worked off the faint, I think it would have been more effective. And tie up every now and then. That's an art also.
Yes, yes.
We have things
timing.
Yes, yes, timing too. Timing will come with fights that aren't put off, you know, for such a length of time.
Yeah, you know what?
It's confidence in the feints. And when your timing's off, you don't have as much confidence in your feints. So.
Yes, yes, and counterpunching also.
You know what, though? I was really tremendously impressed, I should say, with the way he dealt with the seventh round. In fact, it really impressed me, and that's when, you know, Zito and I were talking about, man, this guy's conditioning is tremendous. Because he didn't have to hold, you know, he moved a lot in the seventh round. He kept himself out of danger by constantly moving. And sometimes, you know, for certain guys, being able to move when they're hurt is better than tying up, because a lot of times you get tied up, you start to get thrown around off balance, and you're vulnerable to punches coming out of the clinch. So for me, it seemed like he was safer moving back. So even when Lopez was catching him as he was moving back, some of the bite of the punches was being taken off because Keith was moving away. I thought he did a phenomenal job of keeping his head clear and calm through that storm in the seventh round, and I don't think the fight could have ever been close to being stopped unless Jose Zito landed another, you know, hellified punch, because Keith was obviously intelligently defending himself.
Great assessment.
no way that fight ever should have been stopped. It wasn't even close.
No.
I mean, he got hit by what I would call a sloppy overhand right, a couple of punches that were, they weren't really deadly punches where Keith was moving in. He didn't get hit moving in. He got hit going away, riding a punch away. So I thought that there wasn't anything ever, a second in that fight that you ever even think about stopping that fight. That would have been outrageous.
The best punch he got hit with was a wide left hook as Keith was rolling off, and it caught him on his chin just as Keith. And to me, that's a timing thing. Like if Keith is not off 22 months, that punch doesn't hit him. But because he was rolling off, but it caught him, and his hand was down. He didn't have his glove up, and it caught him flush on his chin. And you saw in the slow motion, you saw his eyes roll. But they came back really quick. So I was kind of, again, conditioning has such a big part in how you recover. And he was never out. He just was hazy, just in that funk, that haze that we unfortunately have, most of us on the show have been in. You know what I mean? So, he wasn't out. He was just in that haze. We know it all too well. And so he just, it's just a matter of getting the body to react to the mind. And, it's just a matter of getting that out to reconnect. And I thought he did a tremendous job with that. And then he did what he had to go ahead and get to the finish line.
Yes.
Dan, do you have any idea when Al Haymon will be looking at to get him back in the ring?
I know he's going to take a month off. I mean, he'll take a month off, and then he'll come back to the gym and, start training again. But as soon as we get a date, then we'll go strong. But hopefully within the next 3 months or 4 months, I hope.
Great.
Dan, and I'm going to tell you guys something here, and I don't know if you guys are going to agree with me or not, but as far as a Pacquiao fight goes, which obviously would be, a good money fight for you guys, as well as a legacy-building fight for you guys, that fight is bandied about now because of the seventh round that happened with Keith. If that doesn't happen, if Keith doesn't look vulnerable, Pacquiao, obviously Floyd is always been the first choice, but the moment Keith looked vulnerable, it was like, well, Floyd doesn't come out, Pacquiao fight Keith Thurman. Stay away from Thurman, Errol Spence, Sean Porter. That's what it's always been, until somebody looks vulnerable. Now it's like, well, if Floyd doesn't come out, Keith Thurman is viable. I love it.
Yeah, I think Porter wants a rematch. He's stated that several times.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that's another option. And another Dan, tough fight.
I know you
have a full stable there, Dan. Is there anybody that's coming up that we can tell people now about them, about the new fighter coming out?
Well, I believe I've mentioned him before, but Mikhail Teal, he fought on the card. He fought on Keith's undercard. He was the first fight, and he won by a knockout with a body shot.
Right. Yeah, I saw that.
The kid, I mean, he can box. He can move. He can do it all. He's really, really a talented kid. And I think, remember that name, Teal, because I believe you're going to hear a lot about him.
Mikhail Teal.
Yes, E-E-A-L, Teal, yeah.
I'll check him out as soon as we get off the show.
M-Y-C-H-E-A-L, Mikhail.
Okay.
Well, Ty, we were, thanks to Dan, we were able to have him on last year, and I'll be up sometime this week, Dan, to talk to you again, and maybe we can get him on again in a week or so.
Okay, sure. That would be great.
Mm-hmm. And about anybody else that we should be looking at?
Well, Jordan Sanders just came back in the gym and started training again. He's a two-time U.S. amateur champion at heavyweight. And if he can stay healthy and stay in the gym,
I've heard of Jordan Sanders. That name. What? As soon as you said it, I was like, wait a minute, I've heard of Jordan Sanders.
Yeah, he won the U.S. Nationals twice. Mm-hmm. Very talented kid, tough as nails. I mean, has all the tools. We just have to, keep him in the gym day by day.
That's great. Well, Dan, I want to thank you for coming on. We appreciate all the time you gave us today. I originally said that we just needed you for 10, 15 minutes, but you've been gracious enough to stay with us now for a half hour. And we appreciate everything you do for our show, and we appreciate everything you do for the people in St. Petersburg. And you certainly have a great stable there, and to watch you work with the guys, and then to watch you on TV when you're in the corner, how calm you stay with those guys. It's no yelling or nothing. It's very reassuring to the boxer, and I'm sure that all our guys really appreciate everything you do. So we want to say thank you.
Thank you very much.
Again, appreciate everything you do.
Anytime, Frank. I enjoy being on your show.
Thank you. We enjoy having you.
All right,
thanks,
guys. Dan. Take care.
You're welcome.
Thank you again.
Guys,
we're
right against our time limit here. Chris, I want to thank you for coming on. It's always great to have you, and you've always got the insight to be able to help us out with some of the past fights from your historian ability, and we really appreciate that. Ty and Zito, you just add so much to the program that we really appreciate everything that you do, and I know that our fans do, because here we are. I never thought, and we're on, I don't know if you know, we're approaching our 1,000th show, and it'll be March 1st will be our 1,000th show, and our first Saturday in March, rather, and we're going to have some of our past guests back on, and going to talk about that. But I know Bob's looking down, and Mel is looking down, and they're just probably standing there together, just smiling like hell that everything's going so well, and we appreciate it. So,
I want to be an old son of a bitch. We did 20 shirts. Now I feel like I'm 90 now, for Christ's sake. Holy Christ. Where'd the time go, Frank?
That's right.
Huh?
That's right. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm ready. Man. I can't believe it. We've just been at it that long. What I was trying to get across to Keith was, I think if Keith fought side to side, moved more side to side than straight back, I think he would have killed that kid with right hand counters. I was just hoping he'd hold his ground, and then, you know, and he could have knocked that kid out, I think. But he took him the hell down and with that left hook. But that was a good fight. But, you know, like I say, you know, you're 22 months.
You had a valid point.
You know, out of the ring that long, and the guy was tough, and he had a great chin. He went in there with abandon. He made the fight because he was a gutsy son of a gun. So, you know, that was he got a win. That's the important thing. You know, nothing happened. But I don't think Pacquiao's going to want to fight him. I got a funny feeling that Keith Styles is too strong for Pacquiao. Pacquiao comes charging in there, gets hit with it was a solid counter punch, man. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
His style is definitely problematic. Always been a problematic. Always thought his style was problematic for Pacquiao. Oh, just styles make fights. And his tough style for Pacquiao. Really is.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow?
Oh, tonight. Don't forget tonight. Sergey Kovalev against Eladar Alvarez on ESPN.
Right. Yeah, the first card.
Yeah,
I'll get back early.
I'll go down and eat and get back early. I'd be anxious to watch that fight. All right, guys.
Yeah,
talk to you next week.
Okay.
We'll see what happens.
Take it easy,
Dr. Bye. Bye now.
Okay. Ty, you want to lead us out?
It's always a pleasure talking to you guys, Dr. Chris, Butch, Zito. Wonderful, and thank you for joining us, Dan Birmingham. Always a pleasure to have you on. Bob is our co-pilot. Coach Mel, we're thinking about you. Everyone have a good week.
Z?
Another wonderful show. I would like to thank Dan Birmingham. I would like to thank Dr. Chris, you, Butch, and Ty, the rest of my Fighting Words family. These shows are definitely in memory of Coach Mel.
And if anyone wants to Coach Mel and Bob, and if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call.
Ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank guys. I want to thank you again for everything you do for the show. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of police and fire services. When you're out there and you see them in a uniform, please just let them know you know they're there. These are very, very tough times, both domestically and in foreign shores. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Kettlecup, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Onofre Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Robert Jermaine, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Delaware State Police Officer Sergeant Rodney Bond, Lieutenant Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Ballard, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Laterna, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy William Gentry, Island County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Clay Zerba, Clay County Deputy Sheriff, and Deputy Sheriff Natalie Corona, L.A. County Sheriff's Office. My brothers and sisters, though you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. And one last thing, happy birthday to Mr. Brady Quinn on his 14th birthday, 2 days after he had a 4-3-point game at Johnson Middle School. So have a great day, Brady.
Shem alek ma yelama, shem ma hezahir ma, son ashen evorat fed, hakuig again ma yelama.
Oh,
County Dispatch in 1999. County Dispatch in 1999. County Dispatch in 1999. All units be advised, 1999's responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul. Good night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.